My name is Lainey Zuver, and you're listening to another interview from my project, 2020 Summer Stories. This interview features Amelia Kemp. Amelia spent her summer in Colorado Springs, Colorado. We discuss her experience organizing for the Black Lives Matter movement in her area, self-care, and family relationships during the summer.
Yeah, I'm Amelia Kemp. I'm 21, and I spent the summer in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So at the beginning of the summer, closer to May 15th, I was pretty bummed because, you know, school had been canceled. I just spent my 21st birthday at home in quarantine. Yeah, but I did have an Apex Fellowship lined up, a small local church. So an Apex Fellowship is through the College of Worcester. It is funding provided by the school to help students be able to afford to participate in an unpaid or underpaid internship or research opportunity. My bosses were my mom's two best friends, so it made it sort of a little bit more like casual and flexible, which was really nice, especially in like the weird COVID situation. Then after George Floyd was killed at the end of May, honestly, June 1st was the first protest I went to. I started going to Black Lives Matter protests in my city, and I really got sucked into working with some of the leaders of the protests, helping to organize them, helping to lead them, all that good stuff. So I did that for almost the entire month of June, basically. So I was technically doing that and my internship, but my internship bosses let me count a lot of that as internship hours because it was like community outreach, essentially, like connection between like the church and the community. And then after both of those things ended, I really mostly spent the rest of the time just hanging out at home. Definitely a roller coaster of emotions. I stayed really busy towards that beginning part, obviously, with all the Black Lives Matter protests. I tended to be out like 10 plus hours a day at the protests. So I was really busy. But then after all that died down, the protest like stuff sort of fell apart in the community for a variety of reasons. So I ended up sort of stepping away and spending a little bit more time with my family, which was nice. It was definitely a lot of family time. And so that, you know, had different effects on my emotions, but I was excited knowing that I was going to be able to go back to school in the fall. So yeah, then I basically, after that, went back to school, and the rest is the school year. Yeah, so originally I wasn't supposed to have that internship at all. I had applied for a few different things, both of which were heavily impacted by COVID-19, and both of which I applied for before the pandemic like really hit the U.S. So the first one I ended up being rejected from because they didn't have enough spots. And they rejected me in like April, right? So like mid-pandemic, they were like, there's no spots. And then the second one I just never heard back from, and that's because it's an arts marketing firm. And so their entire business got shut down, essentially. Basically, I mean, my mom was talking to her friends about that, and they were like, well, we need someone to do communications for us, so if she can get funding from her school, like, we can bring her on. So they essentially invented that internship for me out of necessity, which was really nice and really lucky. And I'm thankful for that because I did get to do some stuff that will be transferable to the jobs that I'm interested in ultimately, like advertising, but I also sort of had the freedom to do things that, you know, happened and that were a surprise.
I started by asking Amelia what her community work looked like.
Yeah, so I was working with sort of a variety of people. Again, it got really messy really quickly because there were a lot of people who were like, me, make it about me, me, me. There were a lot of men who were really ignoring the women, and then everything fell apart because they refused to work together. It was a whole thing. I was mostly working with one person who had organized some protests in the past, and then my boss met him and was like, hey, you should contact this guy and see if there's anything we can do to help. And so I was mostly working with him and a couple other people there. And so I adminned a Facebook page. I helped him write like his little speeches he gave. I also helped actually like physically lead the protests, like marching. And I was always there to do like little logistic things and also make like connections, almost like a secretary kind of, like that's weird to say, but because it was so informal, but it's kind of like that.
I wanted to fill some gaps in for myself, so I asked Amelia how she would describe the political identity of Colorado Springs.
Yeah, so politically, Colorado Springs is very conservative. So the city's definitely sort of sectioned out in terms of how conservative it is. It tends to be slightly more liberal downtown and a lot more conservative up where I live, up north. But I was protesting downtown. Honestly, up north, if the protests had happened here, like, probably people would have just brought their own guns and shot us themselves. I'm not even kidding. Yeah, so I was protesting downtown. And so, yeah, we got a lot of support. Like, people would honk in support as they drove by, which felt really good. We definitely did get some people calling out the N-word and, like, saying horrible things. And we did, we had a group of 3%ers come and start camping out around our protests and trying to, like, infiltrate. Oh, yeah, so the 3%ers are a far-right extremist militia group. They'll claim that they're not, but that's what they are. The name stems from the false claim that only 3% of, who was it, American settlers or whatever, took up arms against the tyrannical British government. A lot of people didn't know who they were till this summer. I actually had known, like, what they were before because I saw someone flying a 3%ers flag next to a Trump flag, and I was like, that can't be good, so I Googled it. Anyways, yeah, so that was messy. They were infiltrating in a lot of cities. They came heavily armed. Colorado is an open carry state. So they had, you know, strapped with like their big automatic weapons and stuff, and basically said that if it came down to it, if anything happened, they would protect the police. As in waiting for an excuse to shoot us. Snipers set up on the roof of nearby parking garages. I mean, like, it was pretty insane. Yeah, overall, the city is conservative, but we had a surprising amount of support. Especially considering there were a lot of protests and there were a lot of times when we got, you know, a couple hundred people out, which is a good turnout, in my opinion, for the area.
On this note, I wondered what police presence looked like at the protests.
Yeah, so initially it was a lot bigger than after protests started blowing up everywhere and there started being widespread complaints about like the way police were handling this and everything, right? Then they started backing off. Because Colorado Springs became a place, like, in national news that, like, the police weren't starting violence in the same way. They were at the beginning, but then once we started making national news for not having those huge incidents, then they really started to back off. They were always around. They would follow us and block off streets around us, and sometimes it was, like, kettling, which is where they are purposely forming barriers so that protesters can't escape if the police decide to take action. Sometimes it appeared to just be to control the flow of traffic, like make it so that traffic wasn't too interrupted. Yeah, they always had drones flying above us, recording us all the time. People in the community were really upset about the protests and saying, you know, like, arrest these people, throw them in jail, like, press charges for blocking traffic. Like, and they actually ultimately did end up, they are in the process of prosecuting some people that they were able to identify from a protest that happened on the interstate. So they're definitely around. There were definitely SWAT vans that hit around corners and tear gas and rubber bullets that were shot once the sun went down. But overall, not as sort of violent or overtly present as they were in, say, Denver.
I continued by asking Amelia how she navigated situations where individuals would criticize the movement while simultaneously being physically and emotionally exhausted herself from her work.
Yeah, so I very purposely didn't engage with most of that kind of stuff. I did write and publish a few pieces about it in some newspapers about protesting and why it's important and why the church needs to get involved and all that kind of stuff. Generally speaking, I did have one friend from school who was like, I understand why people are doing this, but I can't condone the looting. Like, I don't, the violence is bad, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, it's just not your place to condone it or not. You don't get to tell people how to protest, right? And so, as we argued a little bit more about that, I just set a different white friend to go and talk to him about it instead of me. Yeah, I mostly interacted with people who were sympathetic to the cause because I was honestly, I didn't have that much of an opportunity to talk to people who weren't. I was mostly surrounded by people who were. And then, like, you know, I'm not going to get in a comment battle with people or anything.
With so many intersecting events this summer, I wondered how Amelia and the people she organized with handled keeping people safe from COVID at the protests.
Yeah, so we always requested that people wear masks. A lot of the leadership actually wasn't very good about it, so not everyone was very good about it. You know, generally, because Colorado Springs is overwhelmingly white, it was mostly white liberals out there, and so they were generally pretty good about wearing their masks. Yeah, some people were good about it, some people weren't, and we were outside all the time, so I mean, that was people's choice. Sort of towards the beginning, I wasn't as good about it as I was, you know, as the protests like continued, like just being honest, I, you know, because I was having to yell and like lead chants and stuff, and so it just didn't make sense to always have a mask over my mouth, made it hard for people to hear me. But especially as the protests went on, both for my own personal safety, and also because of COVID-19, I started wearing my mask all the time. You know, especially as like ICU beds were filling up and everything. Numbers weren't quite so high in Colorado at the time because everything was locked down. But then as things started opening back up, then I really started wearing my mask a lot. Yeah, you know, we would ask that people bring their masks and that they wear them, but there's only so much you can do at the end of the day.
Obviously, the protests were prompted by tragic events that never should have occurred. However, I wanted to know if Amelia experienced any positive moments of joy with her community during the protests.
Yeah, there were actually a lot of joyful moments where, you know, we were like, well, we're all here, so we might as well do something joyful together, right? So, like, there was one day as the sun was setting, we had a road blocked off and we all had like a dance party. And there was one day that there was just a huge group of people that went on this big long march with us all around some of the neighborhoods, and it was just so powerful for me to like see all these different people and people that I knew from high school that I didn't realize were like sympathetic to the cause, like all these different, and just how large the group was. It was really moving for me. So the I feel like those are the kinds of moments that ended up being joyful. Like, and there were also times of joy, you know, like working with the other people who were like coordinating the protests and stuff. We had times where we were, you know, like just having fun or doing something fun together or whatever. It didn't always have to be 100% serious all the time, especially because there was a lot of sort of waiting around during the day, sort of like in between marches and stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of stressful times. There were a lot of times that made me really sad and angry and stressed out, but then there were some definitely some moments of joy.
I switched gears a little bit to ask Amelia how her feelings about COVID and the boundaries with her immediate circle transformed as the summer progressed.
Yeah, so in terms of my initial family, my mom was always really worried about it. Like, as soon as it became like, you know, something serious in the US, she was taking it seriously. She was reading all the news about it. And I'd say she was the one doing that the most out of all of us, besides maybe my sister Isabel, but she stays home all the time anyway, so it wasn't a change to her behavior. Those two were pretty anxious about it. My dad was slower to get on board. He's a boomer. So that's an interesting, been an interesting generational thing, I think, that a lot of people have seen. He definitely came around, especially as my mom became more stressed out about it. She was just like, can you please, like, try to make sure you're not around people at work. He's like, well, we're all wearing masks. She's like, but still, like, you're inside. Like, can you just please try it, right? And so, you know, he became really good about all of that and has been good about it since then. Yeah, my opinions on it definitely shifted. I was definitely a mask wearer from, like, the beginning. Like, as soon as mom was like, okay, they're saying we should start wearing masks. Like, we can't buy these medical masks anywhere. So I actually had a few from my roommate. Because she'd had her dad send her a bunch from China before she left for spring break. And I had been like, she'd been like, do you want some? She gave me like 4. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, this was before everything really blew up, right? So I was like, okay, I think I'll be okay, but thanks. And then my mom was like, save those. Yeah, so my mom started making her own masks. And we still wear those. She did a lot of experimenting, I'll tell you what. But yeah, so I've definitely been a mask wearer from the beginning, and now it's second nature. Like, I'm never not wearing one, especially whenever I'm indoors with other people. In terms of socially, initially, you know, I was more like, well, okay, like, I get it, but also, can I just see this person? Can I just see this person? Whatever, whatever. And honestly, because I was going to the protests already, my mom was like, you know what, like, fine, I guess. Like, you can go see, you know, my friend Liv, who never sees anyone besides her family. She's like, if they're okay with that, then, like, you can go, right? But, you know, I tried to limit that. Yeah, it was interesting socially. Like, I had just sort of started being open to the idea of, like, dating around and, like, seeing different people, hooking up with different people, and then, like, a pandemic happened, right? So navigating that was interesting. I did see, like, one person one time, and I, like, lied to my mom about it. It was a whole thing. He never found out, thank God. Like, it was just, like, you know, and I felt guilty about it, but also I was like, I'm dying. So, you know, it's hard navigating that, like, line. Yeah, and my sister Chloe is in high school. She's 16. She just turned 17, so she has a hard time with it. She is incredibly social, so she just walks around depressed all the time. She does wear her mask and everything. She wears it well, usually. Sometimes it's sitting right on the cusp of her nose, and I say, pull that up. Yeah, there's been a couple times where we as a family have had to be mad at her for making a choice, like, that was not COVID safe, and we're like, excuse me. So, you know, it all just goes along with things being hard, and we've had to make a lot of social sacrifices. Yeah, it's been sort of like a negotiation the whole time.
I wanted to ask Amelia the question I've asked a majority of my participants. What media did she consume over the summer?
Generally speaking, I wasn't really taking in that much news because it was just too overwhelming, everything going on. You know, I read stuff that I saw on Instagram, and if anything particularly caught my attention, I did extra research on it. Same with Twitter. But I found that Instagram and Twitter tended to be the best frontline reports. I was really keeping an eye on what was happening with protests. And then, let's see, I read the news for Colorado Springs sometimes, like when the cops were trying to arrest certain people for being part of the protests and that kind of thing. I kept up with that. But generally speaking, when I was consuming media, especially because, again, I was out and about most of the time, like out doing protest stuff, and so not consuming media, it was generally like Netflix or YouTube videos, like things that were just like not that serious. Or like if it was serious, it's like scripted, so. But, like, I, you know, I didn't watch, like, When They See Us or any of those things. It was just, like, too much at the time. But, you know, so just watching Netflix shows, YouTube videos, things that were, like, more lighthearted or scripted, things that I could, like, get into, I did a lot of that.
My next question was about how Amelia took care of herself over the summer.
Yeah, so I actually did a really bad job of taking care of myself for most of the protest stuff because I was super busy. I was stretched super thin. And then, like, things got, like, messy and complicated within the actual, like, protests and the people who were leading them and all this stuff. And so I was super stressed out and so just didn't do a very good job of taking care of myself. I, like, didn't really eat that much. I was just, like, I did drink a lot of water. Mm-hmm. I basically only drank water. Yeah. Ultimately, I ended up spending time with people that I loved, like, whether that be friends or family, whatever. And when I spent that time with my friends, I would, like, take that time to, like, turn off as much as I could in terms of, like, protest things and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then once the protests were over, I got into embroidery, which was fun. I cut my own bangs. I did a lot of cooking. I love to cook. And, yeah, watched a lot of Netflix. I've really found that, like, my self-care is just watching shit, which is, like, bad because it means I'm watching shit for, like, hours and hours when I have nothing to do and I'm depressed. But, like, taking baths and watching things and making sure to spend time with people that I could, like, decompress.
I circled back to the protests to ask if she wanted to talk at all about what went wrong in the community organizing she was a part of.
It was basically just, like, an issue of pride and people's pride getting in the way of them being able to actually make good decisions on the behalf of the movement. So then protest groups were splintering off and different people were like, well, I won't go to the protest if it's led by this person because I support this person. Like, it was petty stuff. It's men. It's the men.
Amelia was in a lot of dangerous and stressful situations over the summer, so I wanted to know, how did her family conversations about her safety over the summer pan out?
Yeah, so my mom was definitely a supporter of the cause. My dad, too. My dad was, I feel like he was gone for work or something. So he wasn't there for a lot of the time that I was doing the protest, which is funny. Like, the timing just, like, right missed each other. But I think he was generally fine with it. And, you know, my sister Chloe wanted to come to a lot of stuff, and my mom didn't want her to come to all of it. My sister Isabel is quietly supportive. She does not like to go to things. So, yeah, my mom did have, she was definitely nervous about all the, like, dangerous situations and making sure that, you know, my identity was, you know, safe and just sort of all that kind of stuff, just looking out for me and making sure that I was going to be safe and also making sure that I was making decisions that weren't dumb. I made a couple of dumb decisions and, like, I'm grateful that they didn't, like, ruin my life or end it or whatever. Generally speaking, she was supportive. She was worried about me, but supportive.
Finally, I ended by asking her how she experienced the historic West Coast wildfires in Colorado.
Well, you're pretty
Colorado
close.
Colorado was burning down. Yeah, you know, it meant that it was hazy, which is pretty normal. It didn't get super bad until right when I left for college, actually. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the fires were not in the Springs this year, so we weren't, like, threatened by them. It was really sad, but it's also something that's super normal for us. It happens pretty much every summer. So, yeah, it sucks and it's really sad. And also, that's the reality of things. Like, I've been evacuated from my house because of a wildfire before. Like, it's pretty, we had two wildfires in the city back-to-back summer, this summer, and then, like back-to-back summers, one set of years. So, it's pretty common. I think that people aren't quite as shaken by it anymore, but it really was, like, heartbreaking to see, especially in California, like, the devastation that was happening in terms of, like, lives and also towns and those implications for the environment.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out more stories at worcesterdigital.org/2020summerstories.